The second presidential debate is tonight. This time, the candidates will field questions from a selected audience of uncommitted voters. Our linguist, Jeff Nunberg, says that if debates are the only chance we get to hear the candidates think on their feet, the town hall format of tonight's debate might be the ultimate test.
In the build-up to last week's presidential debate, nobody could resist comparing it to a sporting event. The only question was which. Chris Matthews called it the big casino, Joe Scarborough described it as Sammy Sosa versus Pedro Martinez, and Andrea Mitchell was one of about 31 commentators who compared it to the Super Bowl. On CNN, Robert Novak said that Bush can play little ball, but Kerry has to hit a home run, while Al Sharpton reminded Kerry to cut the ring off and make him fight. But the most apt sporting comparison is probably to Olympic figure skating, a quadrennial competition that nobody has any idea how to score unless one of the competitors actually falls down. If you listened only to the media talk about the debates, it could be hard to tell them from an American Idol episode. Over the years, the proportion of post-debate coverage devoted to discussions of the issues has dropped to around 10%. The pundits dissect each twitch and frown for the impact it might have had on the ordinary folks who will be chewing it over at the water coolers the next day. Party spokesmen hype the rhetorical skills of their opponents with the implication that the viewing public is easily taken in by debating gimmicks. You'd think the viewing public would be insulted by that, except that we don't really think it applies to us. We all consider ourselves wise to the play of appearances. And when we finally make up our collective mind about the winner 2 or 3 days later, nobody's sure what the criteria were, apart from that mysterious business of who looked presidential to the voters. As it happens, that phrase first became common in the American political lexicon in the 1970s, when the televised debate was permanently revived after a 16-year lull, and when the networks first began broadcasting post-debate commentary and spin. Looking presidential in debates is like artistic merit in figure skating, an imponderable that nobody feels obliged to pin down. High-minded people tend to grumble that the rules are set up to turn the confrontations into beauty contests rather than what they call real debates. Shortly after the Kennedy-Nixon debates, Henry Steele Commager wrote that the format privileges the glib, the evasive, the dogmatic, and the melodramatic over the sincere, the judicious, the sober, and the honest. But actually, what the critics mean by a real debate isn't much like what goes on at the Oxford Union or a high school debate club. It's more like a serious back-and-forth discussion of the issues where each candidate would lay out his views on whether China should be included in the negotiations with North Korea, and then the public could make up its own mind who was right. But the fact is that the debates are about the only occasion we have to watch the candidates thinking on their feet. True, what they're mostly thinking about is which canned response to substitute for an answer. But there's an art to that, too. The elaborate rules the party set up in advance can only determine what kind of talk show the debate is going to be. In the end, the candidates are going to be evaluated according to how well they perform as guests. And in that department, we viewers are as knowledgeable as a figure skating judge who's giving points for a triple axel. And the debates are undeniably informative, even if they don't leave us much clearer on the issues. As Alan Schroeder remarked in his History of the Presidential Debates, no matter how the deck has been stacked, little arrows of verisimilitude manage to shoot out of the screen. The format of last Thursday's debate may have been chosen to minimize the risk to the candidates, but it also happened to create a setting that discouraged grandstanding and condescension. Even if the answers were ultimately aimed at the viewing audience, they had to be framed as if they were addressed to Jim Lehrer, which required a certain modulation of tone. A candidate can't respond to a question with the jabs and one-liners that he uses to work the crowd at campaign rallies. It would feel the way it does when a comic tries to converse with Leno or Letterman in nightclub shtick. As it happens, that format neutralized a lot of the techniques that have made the president so effective when he's speaking to his supporters. The sarcasm that brings the listeners in on the joke, the rising pauses that seem to ask for a response from the audience. Even if we couldn't see Jim Lehrer's reactions, we know he wouldn't have gone there. And it was striking that Kerry came off so well without following the pundit's advice to avoid complexity and reveal his lighter side. True, he was a bit crisper than usual, but his sentences were still a lot longer than Bush's, and he kept ticking off points on his fingers. And apart from a kindly quip about Bush's daughters, he was all business. This may all play very differently in the town hall format of tonight's debate, where the audience will be an active force in the room, and where the setting's more congenial to elaborate demonstrations of feeling people's pain. Even so, neither of these two candidates is going to be able to keep viewers from taking their measure. We're at least as skillful at watching talk shows as they are at appearing on them.
Jeff Nunberg is a Stanford linguist and the author of Going Nuclear: Language, Politics, and Culture in Confrontational Times.